Senior Focus.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie. I'm your presenter for this session, and our session today is focusing on storytelling, on grandparents' role in transmitting their wisdom and their knowledge about the way the world was when they were growing up. And some of us can remember storytelling done by our aunties and uncles and our mothers and fathers at events like weddings and big gatherings for birthdays for older folk that took place is, you know, part and parcel of being an extended family, and it was very much the norm. I think today, where families are very spread out across the globe, we live in a different society and we have less chance for storytelling to take place naturally, less opportunities to recount and relive and enjoy and pass on the fun, the enjoyment, the challenges and some of the unexpected things that happen to us in our lives. So today I want to talk about the fact that a group of seniors that I've been working with over the last 18 months has been working on preparing how they could generate storytelling in schools, how they could participate in schools and sharing their stories, particularly around topics to do with history, either local history of the local area or history connected with women getting the vote, for example, or history connected with farming or industry or particular areas of living where they have first-hand experience of some of the changes that we've undergone. And some of us can recount stories quite easily. Others of us find that we write bits, but then when we go to read them or share them orally, we want to make quite a lot of changes. So we found being in a group very helpful to the process. I also have come across a book called With Love, Gifting Your Stories to Grandchildren. It's in its second edition. It's by Mike Patterson. And it's particularly informative because it covers such a wide range of things, like different ways that you can work on a story, ways that you can generate ideas, ways you can generate vocab, ways you can design twists and different endings, ways you can move out of just something that's a memoir into something that encapsulates a lot of comment on society but without lecturing. So there are many suggestions in this book and I won't go into them all today, but if you can get a copy, I suggest you do. It was published in 2001 by Tandem Press, and they're a New Zealand publisher in Birkenhead on the North Shore. So it should be possible to pick up a copy in your local library. So it's Gifting Your Stories to Grandchildren, and it's entitled With Love. Mike Patterson is the author. So we are going to, as a group, open up to a wider group to be able to share some of our process and maybe even incorporate some of the processes that are in this book. And we're currently exploring what is the best way to do this, whether it's a once a month session and people go away and write in between times and practice telling the stories with different children in different ways. We're happy to work with local schools and do the initiation to get entry to the schools because there's police checks involved and so on. So if you want to contact me, email me Anne-Marie, that's A-N-N-E-M-A-R-I-E dot Currie, C-O-U-R-Y, at gmail.com. And just drop me a line and let me know that you're interested, and I will make contact and invite you to join the group if it seems appropriate, but we will talk through what your interest and needs are first. Now, this Senior Focus radio show is designed to encourage people 50 plus to have a better life, to make the most of the second half of their life. And part of that process is really taking steps to be proactive and looking after your own mental health. And what's this got to do with storytelling? Well, quite a lot, actually. You'd be surprised. So I was reading some comments about what people can do to improve their own mental health and how they can look after themselves better when they're going through upheavals and stress and post-emergencies and disasters and so on. Because with COVID-19, we haven't seen the end of this yet. There is uncertainty and there's a lot of reaction. I've been contacted by five families in the last 2 weeks where there's been a member commit suicide and other family members wanting support or wanting to know how they can be helpful to others that are surrounding this immediate family. I've also been contacted by people who nieces and nephews or grandchildren are being cast aside by the parents. They're being told they're not wanted anymore because the parents themselves are under enormous stress and they're not coping. So when these sorts of things trouble us and we're on the fringes of these things going on around us, it and people look to us for help, it doesn't happen to me that often that I get so many families all at once. And I'm not a social worker, I'm just an individual who is well connected. But it's talking to a few other people, I'm finding that there's quite a lot of people have noticed some quite extreme behaviours coming out of people that they wouldn't have expected. And I think this is a reaction to all the upheaval that's going on around COVID-19 and the fear. People are on the brink of losing jobs and people are looking ahead and thinking, well, you know, what can we sustain? What is sustainable? What can we continue to have and what we need to cut back on and so on? So I think there's a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty, and that is destabilizing relationships and it's putting a lot of people under stress. So in this sort of a context, the role of older people in society is very important. They become the cushions, the ears, the arms to support, to reach out, to provide more certainty, more strength, because they've lived through a lot themselves. And in that process of living, they have found inner strength. They're not dependent on pill popping so much or getting their fix from whatever is immediate, because they've learned to move past that. During the Depression or the war years, there weren't easy remedies and people had to be resourceful. And through that process of developing confidence in their own inner self and their own judgment, they learn to live with hope, live with resilience, and really be resourceful. And a lot of recycling and reusing of products in inventive ways took place during those periods. So I guess it's people like that can actually give direction and strength to younger people and to parents who are trying to cope with teenagers who are living in a way where they're heavily influenced by peers and more likely to listen to those peers than to their respective parents. Now, where does storytelling fit into all of this? I remember my cousins that were slightly older than me and cousins that were younger, ringing up to find out if my father was going to a family gathering. Because if he was going to go, they were going to go. They were teenagers, but they would hang on every word that my father spoke, because he was a very gifted storyteller. He had the art of making people laugh, But he also had a message in his story, and it was very, very interesting. He managed to have everyone spellbound, and you could hear a pin drop almost. And the enthusiasm with which people turned up because he was there and he was going to be telling stories was just legendary. And I remember the last occasion when I spoke to one of my cousins in Christchurch. He unfortunately passed away not long after the Christchurch earthquakes finished. And so I don't have the pleasure of talking to him now, but I will never forget that last occasion because he couldn't stop talking about my father. He just was reliving the experiences he had listening to my father tell stories. And that was a very rich part of his life, and he obviously valued it very greatly. So we don't always realise the impact we have on others. We don't always realise what our life experience, how it's going to be valued and seen by others until we actually weave it into stories. And we often don't realise that we may be the last people in our immediate family and in our society, wider society, we may be the last people with the insights about that particular way of life, that particular set of values. And so we can express things and articulate things and get things into the consciousness of the next generation, which would otherwise be lost. So that is the reason for my motivation on focusing on storytelling. And I never considered that I was gifted at this at all, but I have relived in my mind the ways that my father did things, and I recognise that I can draw on that strength and on that DNA and actually cultivate this role and articulate some of the things that we went through, some of the experiences growing up, some of the values and the way they were transmitted, and some of the unique things that we had that you won't see now, and the next generation will not have any idea at all about this unless people like yourselves and myself actually commit ourselves to this act of storytelling and passing on. And it doesn't need to be lecturing or boring. It doesn't need to be laboured. It can be fun, and it can be very enjoyable, and it can be something that really captivates people and gets them thinking. So what have I done in terms of actual production? I've told stories within the actual group, and I've told stories to some young children. I often did tell stories when I was teaching in classrooms. Sometimes I would make them up. I would take three objects and I would announce what these three objects were, and then I would invite the students to participate with me in creating a story about these objects. And it might be a white horse and a trumpet and a golden staff, or it might be a particular unusual vegetable that most people didn't know about, and a young child that was lost, and an animal that took on human characteristics. And so, you know, the story would begin. I would start the story off, and then we would move around with people adding to the story as they felt motivated. And so we would often find a way of recording it so that we actually had that going on very quietly in the background. Not to disturb, not to intrude, but to make sure we captured what was really significant and what people said. And then, of course, it was available for children to listen to on a listening post. Now, nowadays we've got very sophisticated cell phones, and it's possible to do all kinds of recording on a phone. It's possible, with people's permission, to put the phone within cooey of a few voices and to have people talking around a table. And it may be that you can start off by talking to your friends and actually asking them about their experiences, that if they were given a task to tell stories about their life, what would they select? Why would they select those things? So that might be one way you can go through working on this. And another way would be to actually record somebody else's story. And I've recently been approached by people in their 80s and 90s who are wanting to tell their stories. They know they've got so much that could come out, but they are really needing the stimulus and the discipline of having another person there to help facilitate this. And so they're talking about digital recordings, maybe having an actual recorder that would be sensitive to picking up from a small lapel mic their voice, and wanting somebody to kind of interview them about certain aspects of their life. So with one person, we've mapped out some topics, and we're going to do a series of interviews and put these on tapes and have them available digitally so that they can go, along with a set of photographs, electronically to grandchildren in other parts of the world. Everyone's different. Everyone's got different avenues to explore, and some people have got a lot of visual stuff. They want to show the woodworking they did, or the art that they did, or photographs of a house they built, or, you know, they actually want to convey visual material and talk about it. But other people want to talk about their interiors, their own feelings and reactions to things in life. And that's more complex, and that requires a high degree of trust between the parties. So these are just ideas to get you thinking about, you know, how you would do this, and what is the connection with mental health and your mental well-being? Well, it's simply the stronger we are connected to our lives, to our past and our future simultaneously, the healthier we are generally. When we're connected to our ancestors and our their way of life and the values they had, we feel nurtured. And when we are connecting to the future, to the children who are coming along, the children we can invest in who are young now, we also feel connected to our past, and we feel that we've got something of value to pass on. And it's very encouraging. That's why people get so excited about having a grandchild. It hasn't happened to me, but I've watched other people's excitement and enthusiasm. And it's quite universal. I don't know anybody who hasn't got all mushy, men included. So it's a great opportunity. And even people who have written things, even people who've written books, history books and so on, there's still a personal element that they can pass on to their respective grandchildren. And maybe they didn't do it with their own children. They were too busy earning a living, being a parent, getting food on the table and so on, and paying off a house. But now is the time when they can. So I'll just take a break at this point, and we'll have some music. And I've chosen one of Ella Fitzgerald's tracks off one of my favourite jazz discs. So I hope you enjoy that. And when we come back, I'll talk some more about your role in passing on knowledge and wisdom to the next generation. Thank you. The boat
to meet us.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking about passing on wisdom, writing your stories, telling your stories. And one of the things that is really critical, I think, in this process is actually having friendship and companionship with other people who are doing this. It can be very lonely working on undertakings by yourself. And also you can get sidetracked. You can easily excuse, oh, I won't do it today. It's a little bit like having a fitness practice. Unless you have a timetable for it, unless you put time aside and you really convince yourself that this is something you're going to prioritize, you probably won't do it. I know I'm reluctantly getting more active walking and doing yoga again, and I have to do it every day. Even if I do less some days than others, I have to actually set that side of time aside and be quite rigorous and not allow anything else to intrude. Otherwise, it just doesn't get done. I get into the day and I'm busy, and comes 4 or 5 o'clock and I think, oh, I haven't done it. But at that point, it doesn't seem very practical or feasible, and it's not as rewarding. The reward comes from doing it in the beginning of the day, where it can benefit me as the day goes on, because my body is very thankful for that quality of energy, and my mind as well. So in the same vein, if we're going to write and tell stories, we do need to make some sacred space available. We need to set that space available on a regular basis. It doesn't have to be daily, but it definitely has to have a rhythm to it, and it has to be that you do it in a particular way. Like I like to have a space, a place where I do it, whether it's in a particular room that I use for writing and work, or whether it's in an office space, or whether it's in the garden, or even in a local park or a library. Wherever it is, it needs to be a regular and then you also need to think about, how can I relate this to other people? How can I work with others, share with others what they are doing? Get that energy of having a buddy who actually writes as well. Somebody who can listen to bits, who won't be critical and won't activate your own critic so that it inhibits you from writing. But somebody who can listen, and then at the appropriate time, when you want it, give you some feedback. And it may be that there are people in your own family that really want you to do this kind of thing and really want this project done. And, you know, they're willing to meet with you once a month. It may be that you can join a group, like, for example, the one I've described, where it started off as a bunch of people that were involved with Grey Power, and it's broadening from that now. But it's just that I might not have met those people if I hadn't been in another meeting in another organisation with them, working on other things. So think about where your hobbies take you. Think about whether there's people who share the same hobbies who also have experiences that they would like to recall and write about. Think about the funny things that have happened. I used to love telling a wonderful story about my father when he was cooking for us, which he did on odd occasions when my mother went out. And he actually would put a pot on the stove, a tin can in it, and boiling water, and he would boil up this whatever was in the tin can, and then he would open the can with a can opener and then serve it up on a plate. Well, we had some fun. We took the labels off cans and didn't tell him what we were doing. But he didn't think anything of it. He just did his usual. And what we ended up with was a pineapple fountain. With pineapple, as he undid the can, the pineapple shot up to the ceiling, juice cubes and all. And it was such entertainment. We had a ball, and fortunately he saw the funny side of it as well. But I've often told that story to children in various classrooms that I've taught in, particularly when I've been relieving and I've needed to have a few tricks up my sleeve, and that's brought great merriment and enjoyment. So if you can think of something funny to start off with, that might be a good way to begin. Now, we're coming to near the end of the program, and I'm going to suggest that in future we will have some people talking about their experiences of writing stories. We'll actually bring other people into this, and we'll do this once a month. But we need to do another fundraising event to help us stay on air, and we are planning to do one at the Lido Theatre, and so I will be announcing it. It'll be there'll be something on our website, the Planet, that's planetaudio.org.nz, and that's where you can also listen to our back programs under S for Senior Focus, and there will be an announcement there about what we're doing, which film it is. We're hoping to do it on the 30th of August, once we've negotiated around the film itself and the timing with the theatre. But it would be very good to have family and friends come along and help support it. So it would be $20 per ticket as a fundraiser, and it's a great opportunity to get out and mix and mingle with people, and you might find some people who are interested in developing a storytelling group or focusing with you on this. So all encouragement to everyone who wants to get going, and please stay in contact, annemarie.currie@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll be with you again next week. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz.
forward slash senior focus, and do note senior focus.